You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
You're home to Twins baseball. And that's where we take this interview. And it's an interesting interview forthcoming. On the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, joining us is Carla Baranakis. It's a tough name to say. It's Greek to me. But I think I got that right, didn't I, Carla?
You pronounced it correctly, and it is actually Lithuanian.
Lithuanian.
It does sound Greek. I will grant
you that. I thought I had one there. There's Lithuanian. Okay, I didn't realize. Okay, that's good.
Nobody ever guesses Lithuanian.
No, I sure wouldn't have. And I looked over at my faithful producer here, and he said this is Greek. So I assumed, you know, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but you know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
Carla, you got an interesting story to tell, both about your roots in Minnesota and beyond with what you've done with your career. Let's start with when your family moved here to Minnesota. How old were you and how did Met Stadium come into play?
Well, we moved in 1967 and I was 12 years old, and we had come from Memphis. And the way that Met Stadium played into it, this was the first time we ever lived in an area with, major professional sports. And my father, who grew up on the East Coast, was a major Red Sox fan. And so every time the Red Sox would come into town, he would sort of casually say, "Let's go see the Twins play."
The Twins, yeah.
even though
let's go see Yastrzemski.
Really,
I mean, the Twins, yeah.
Yeah, and he actually was a friend of Sal Magley, who was a pitching coach for Boston at the time. And so he actually even finagled an introduction to Carl Yastrzemski for us. So he was Red Sox through and through, but he always phrases, "Let's go see how the Twins are doing."
Okay, but you took to baseball and you took to the Twins and you took
Absolutely.
To Tony Oliva. How did this evolve for you?
Well, back then, I mean, this was when, you know, the greats were on the team. You know, you had Harmon Killebrew, you had Tony Oliva, you had Zoilo Versel, Cesar Tovar. And so it was just a great team to watch. And back in those days when soda pop came in bottles with caps on them.
You bet.
They used to have a thing where you could collect the bottle caps with the pictures of the players underneath. And so I had a big chart where I was pasting all the bottle caps on, trying to get them all. So the Twins were a big thing. The Twins were a huge thing. And I loved baseball. I thought there was nothing better than going out to the ballpark and watching them play.
So much so that you ended up working at the stadium, right?
Yes, I ended up being a Twins usher in 1977, and unfortunately, that was the first year of Tony Oliva's retirement, but I still got to see Rod Carew.
Oh, he threatened to hit 400 that year.
Yep, so that was very exciting. And then the other thing I love about the Twins is that Tony Oliva and Rod Carew, when they were both playing, were roommates.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just would love to have been a fly on the wall to hear them talk about hitting. You know, they get back in the room and I just can't even imagine what they must have said.
No, for sure. And now you develop your own career in as a reporter. Explain your journalism career.
Well, my journalism career, I started as a clerk at the Star Tribune. And then I moved around to some other newspapers in the middle part of the country, very small ones in some cases. But I worked my way up to the Grand Forks Herald, and then eventually to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And 1 year at the Post-Dispatch, the managing editor noticed that I was using my vacation to go to spring training in Florida. So he decided to put me in the sports department. And that led to me being in the sports department when the Cardinals and the Twins played in the World Series in 1987. And that was a great moment for me because some friends of mine in Minnesota, when it got to the seventh game, called me and said, we've got a ticket for you. Come on up for game seven. And then by some miracle, one of my colleagues in the sports department called me and said, I have a feeling somebody's going to offer you a ticket to game seven. So if you need me to cover your shift, I'll do it.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so I got to be there for that great moment. And the other moment in history that I was there for is when they closed Metropolitan Stadium, when the last game that they had there. My mother was not a baseball fan at all, and she was a trooper because it was a rainy, miserable day, and she went with me to that game. And I always have a fond memory of her for that because that was beyond the call of duty for a non-baseball fan.
Okay, but in the midst of all this, and you end up working for the New York Times and a number of different places, you really had an affinity for Tony Oliva, and you really had a wish that he would make the Hall of Fame. How did that evolve?
Well, I just thought he deserved it because he was just a dominant player when he was playing. And when I moved to New York in 1988, all of my friends said, oh, you're such a baseball fan. I bet you're going to go up to the Hall of Fame. And I said, no, I am not. Tony Oliva is not in the Hall of Fame, and I don't think that's right. And I'm not going until Tony Oliva gets into the Hall of Fame.
And you thought, what the heck, it'll be a few years only, right?
Yeah. You know, I didn't think it would be 30-plus years from when I said that. But the other thing is I worked in the sports department, and so, you know, I was around a lot of baseball writers, and I'm sure they remember me ranting repeatedly.
What would they tell you? What reason would they give you for not voting for him?
The reason they would give me is that he didn't have the longevity.
Yeah.
And I would counter with, that's right, he didn't have the longevity of some other players. However, he injured his knees. And back in that day, they didn't have the kind of orthopedic surgery that they could repair that and give him more longevity. And while he was playing, you know, really, he was, until just the very last years, he was very consistently right up there. So, you know, I think he was penalized for that. But the other thing I noticed with the Hall of Fame ceremony this year when he and Jim Cott were inducted, Jim Cott had nothing but longevity.
That's right.
It took him a long time to get in.
That's true.
And then the thing that they branded Tony Oliva with, he didn't have the longevity. Well, you know, he produced. One other thing I'll mention, I just recently finished reading a book by Paul O'Neill and Jack Curry called Swing and a Hit, where it just talks in detail about hitting and how difficult it is and how it's even difficult to be, you know, a hitter as opposed to a home run hitter because, you know, everybody loves the home run. But being the guy that produces the hits time after time after time, you know, that's so important to a team. And so, you know, that's what Tony Oliva had home runs, you know, don't count him out.
Oh, yeah, he had power, yep.
But, you know, when he came to bat, he was going to get a hit. That's who he was.
Yeah, they say he was the best bad ball hitter they'd ever seen. You know, it didn't matter where you threw it, he could square it up. And there's an old saying for guys that come from Cuba or anywhere else that you can't walk off the island. And so if you're gonna make it to the big leagues, you got to hit and you got to swing at everything to prove yourself. And he was case in point. So, Carlo Baranakis, yesterday you got to attend your first ever Hall of Fame induction ceremony because you lifted your personal boycott. What was it like at Cooperstown?
Oh, it was just so exciting. And there was a huge crowd there. I think they estimated something like 30,000 people. And there were people wearing Twins garb. There were a lot of people wearing Red Sox garb, but I claim David Ortiz too. I'm a big Poppy fan.
Yep.
And then there were other people, you know, in Mets gear with Gil Hodges. And so it was just an exciting day. I got there, I think, a good 2 to 2.5 hours before it started because I wanted to make sure I could get a parking spot. I wanted to make sure that I got in. And then the feeling there was so great. Everybody in the crowd was so happy, no matter who they were there for. And I was actually sitting next to a woman whose son is the godson of Tony Oliva.
Really?
And she was charming and lovely, as you would expect. Because the other thing I love about both Tony Oliva, Jim Cott, both of them are just really gracious and lovely people.
Yeah.
And especially with Tony Oliva, over the years, I've never had the pleasure of meeting him myself, but over the years, so many people that I know who have met him, even, you know, in awkward moments, like if he's eating dinner or, you know, out shopping or something, they always say that he is so gracious, so kind, so lovely. I've never heard a single bad thing about him.
It all came together for you yesterday, huh?
Oh, it all came together for me. It was just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And, oh, I have a favor if you could, if you would allow me to ask your listeners.
Yeah.
Tony Oliva on Twitter, he's Tony Oliva 6, and he is just 18 followers short of 5,000 followers. And I think a Hall of Famer deserves to have at least 5,000
followers. Oh, yeah, you'd have five
followers.
Grand for sure.
Yeah. So
sure.
I just encourage anybody who's on Twitter to please follow him. And he posts interesting things, so he's a good person to follow.
All right, last question for you. What was your favorite time as a journalist? Was it at the Times, the St. Louis Dispatch? What was it?
Well, I have to say that I've just enjoyed everything that I've done in journalism. I've done so many things that I would never have expected in a million years. And, you know, and that includes things like, a number of years ago, getting to go to the NBA draft because, you know, one of the reporters needed some help with some of the things he was doing. There have been so many wonderful moments, but I have to say that as a journalist, the thing that was the most compelling was 9/11. And after 9/11, I wrote some of the portraits of grief that the New York Times ran.
My.
And so interviewing the families and friends of people who had died was one of the most difficult things that I've ever done, but it also made me feel like I was doing the most important work I had ever done.
So I mean, when that day happened, were you at the office? What happened?
I was actually at home in New Jersey. I was supposed to be on vacation, but as soon as I saw what was happening, I knew that the vacation was over. And then I spent my day reporting on the New Jersey side of the river because what they were doing is moving people out of Manhattan over to New Jersey. And then from then on, it was just nonstop for a really long time. And I have to say that, you know, that was when you really could see how important journalism is. And how important it is to tell people's stories.
Oh, boy, yeah. Those moments, I mean, yeah, sometimes we forget that we matter, so to speak, in this business. And you know, different reasons for that. But when all eyes are on whatever that story is and you're in the middle of that story, it's pretty compelling and pretty invigorating, isn't it?
It sure is. And it is truly an honor to be able
an
to
honor,
do
a humble
that
honor,
kind of work.
Isn't it?
It is an honor. But I also want to add that the happy stories like Tony Oliva, which is finally a happy story,
It
was unhappy for so many years. But those stories are equally important because that's what life is. It's a whole combination of things.
Yep.
And so we have to celebrate the times that we need to celebrate, and then we have to really stop and pause at the times of sorrow.
That's right. And they're both important because they're both a part of life. And you know, sometimes news organizations, all of us, tend to look for the negative and gravitate to that and use fear as our motivating force. But doggone it, there's some yesterday being the ultimate. And one last thing, how good do Tony Oliva and Jim Cott look at age 84 and 83?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's just, it's a little depressing.
They stand up there and they just look, you know, they look like their tailored clothes are tailored. And, I mean, they just look really good.
They looked really, really good. And what I also like is that both of them just really have a delightful sense of humor.
Yes.
They all do.
Yes.
And I loved it when Tony Oliva ended his speech with baseball being very, very, very good to me.
Yeah, we all, if we're from a generation, that's a phrase we'll never forget.
We'll never forget. Yeah. And you know what? And I just hope that Mr. Oliva continues to celebrate like crazy.
He will.
In addition to Jim Cott. Oh, the one thing I forgot to mention about Jim Cott. I was actually working in St. Louis in 82.
Oh, when he won
Jim
it.
Jim Cott was with the Cardinals
yeah.
and they won the World Series. So, you know, baseball gives us so many wonderful moments.
Oh. I'm glad you pointed out a few, Carol. Thank you for telling your story through your eyes. It's just fun stuff and fun to visit with you. And continued success in all your reporting and editing. But thank you for giving us a different perspective on it.
Okay, thank you.
You bet, Carol Marinakis.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.